Hello, and welcome to another episode of Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. I'm Chuck Stanley, senior policy reporter for Infralogic, and I'm extremely fortunate today to be joined by Matt Shanahan, managing director at Marathon Capital. Matt has a great wealth of experience developing financing solutions for the renewable energy transition, particularly in the area of tax equity transactions. I'll be speaking with him today about the current state of the renewable energy sector and the major factors that are likely to shape the industry in the near future. Matt, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about tax equity and tax credit transfers in the post-IRA world.
Well, there's obviously a lot going on in the renewable energy sector right now, and I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on all of those. But I wonder if you could start by telling listeners a little bit about yourself and the work that you do with Marathon Capital.
Sure, Chuck. Thanks for the opportunity to talk here. I manage the tax equity advisory practice at Marathon Capital. So what we do there is we primarily, raise tax equity for developers for wind projects, solar projects, standalone storage, and carbon capture projects. And just to step back a little bit and make sure we understand and define what tax equity investment is. In the U.S. energy market, the primary incentive at the federal level are tax benefits, tax credits and accelerated depreciation deductions. But in order to get value out of those tax credits, a developer has to be a taxpayer, right? Because the tax credits reduce taxes. Otherwise, you would pay to the federal government. Very, very few developers of renewable energy projects have the quantum of tax liabilities that can absorb the tax credits falling out of these projects. So the solution in order to get benefits out of these credits is to form a partnership with a large taxpaying institution, have the partnership acquire the project, and then allocate 99% of the tax attributes to that investor and a minority of the cash so that the developer essentially indirectly gets the benefits of these tax credits and other tax benefits by raising capital whose return is primarily paid with tax credits they can't otherwise use. So these are, they're equity investors, but they're primarily paid with tax incentives. So hence the phrase tax equity. In addition to a tax equity partnership transaction, the IRA allowed the direct transfer of tax credits, i.e. if I'm a developer and I'm developing a solar project and I have $100 million of investment tax credits, I can actually sell that $100 million to an unrelated party for cash. So much simpler transaction. I turn around, I sell that 100, maybe I get $95 million for it. And now that cash goes to help build out the project. So in the current market, we're seeing both tax equity and investments and transfer transactions, as well as what we call hybrid transactions, where the parties form a tax equity partnership, but the tax equity partnership then turns around and transfers the tax credits. And that allows two things. One, when you transfer a tax credit, you cannot transfer accelerated depreciation, which also has value. In a tax equity partnership, the accelerated depreciation benefits, are allocated to the tax equity and do generate value. So with a hybrid transaction, you do monetize that depreciation. In addition to that, because the partnership is selling the tax credits, it opens up the tax equity investor to be able to do additional business because now they've not used all of their tax capacity and taken the tax credits. So to put the numbers on where the market is, historically, the last 3 years, the tax equity market has been an $18 to $20 billion a year market in terms of new investment per year. When you look at the volume of new business that the IRA would drive by the extension of the ITC and PTCs up to 2032, the extension of ITC to standalone storage, the offshore and wind tax credits, and carbon capture and clean hydrogen tax credits, you easily get to a demand which is 2 to 3 times the $18 to $20 billion a year. So now you need $40 to $60 billion a year of tax capital. And what we're starting to see in the market is that the volume of traditional tax equity is probably about the same, but a lot of that growth, most of the growth is coming out of the transfer market by U.S. corporations acquiring tax credits either in straight transfer transaction or in a hybrid transaction.
So those are some pretty eye-popping numbers. You mentioned that a lot of that is driven by these incentives in the IRA as well as the opening up of this tax credit transfer market through the legislation. Over the past couple of years, we've also had a lot of turbulence in the macroeconomic landscape where interest rates have been a lot higher, inflation has been a lot higher, the cost of capital has been a lot higher relative to what we've seen over the past couple of decades. I wonder, with that in mind, if you could talk a little bit about the net effect of all these changes on the investment landscape for renewable energy right now in 2024?
Yeah, so you've got two things going on, right? The tax credits, which are driving an expansion of the industry. But as you point out, interest rates mean much higher and costs going up considerably, which you know, drive the other way. So what we've seen the past probably year and a half and maybe 2 years now is a kind of resetting of expectations. Just a little history. Traditionally, particularly in the solar market, you know, the costs were coming down significantly each year. And so a lot of the, you know, the way developers worked is they'd secure an offtake agreement, a PPA, you know, develop the project for 2 to 3 more years, watch those costs come down considerably, and then, you know, kind of reap the benefits through a development fee. Now, what flipped around starting probably about 2022 is costs started to go up, not go down, but started to increase. And that was due to general inflationary pressures, you know, coming out of the COVID era and, you know, tariffs on solar panels. So it started to work the other way, where all of a sudden these, you know, these offtakes that had been secured 2 to 3 years ago made the projects uneconomical at current build costs. In addition to that, you had an increase in interest rates, so your cost of capital is going up. So what we saw was a great resetting of offtake rates, of PPA rates. And in some cases, there were voluntary restructurings. In some cases, there were just terminations, you know, for fees, usually. And now we're starting to see a more balanced market where the offtakes are more in line with the cost and the cost of capital to build these structures. So it went through a period of renegotiation. But I would say for the most part, it became very clear that the market for renewable power was strong enough that the offtakers renegotiated these power purchase agreements and allowed these projects to move forward. Kind of the one exception to that would be if you look at the offshore wind industry, where you had really significant increase in cost. And there have not been so much renegotiations as terminations of the power purchase agreements because they're uneconomical. And that's going to go through a resetting process as we move forward.
Yes. And those are developments we've been following at InfraLogic. It's been kind of a soap opera with the ups and downs of the offshore wind sector. But hopefully we're seeing that begin to reset. Overall, does it seem like with this kind of restabilization you're describing, particularly in the onshore renewables sector, that development and demand for investment are continuing to remain strong?
Very strong. Yes, absolutely. So you've got solar continuing to grow, wind growing, but not, you know, because of time of day generation that solar has an advantage, right? We've probably seen more solar than wind, but some wind. And a lot of standalone storage now that it's eligible for the ITC, which of course, if you look at markets with high renewable penetration, you really need storage. And that, if you look at, you know, Texas and California particularly, as storage markets.
And you mentioned the sort of major role that transferability of the tax credits plays in the tax equity landscape or the investment landscape, particularly with this massive increase in the available tax credits in the market. I know when this was sort of initially discussed as a policy proposal, one of the benefits that was kind of advertised was that it would allow smaller developers to monetize these tax credits in a way that traditionally hasn't been as easy for them to do through the traditional tax equity market. They don't have the ongoing relationships with these tax equity financiers. Their projects don't tend to be as large enough to draw as much interest from the traditional market. Does it seem like small developers have been able to access financing more easily through the transfer deals?
No question about it. So if you look at the kind of traditional tax equity market, these are generally very large commercial banks who prefer doing business with very large global developers, right? So that has, you pointed out, left smaller developers unable to access that capital. Now, through the ability to transfer tax credits, we are seeing, you know, these projects. And I'd say it's more than just small developers. It's perhaps projects in regions that were troubled because of curtailment issues or basis issues. It's, you know, newer developers who may be sizable, but it's the first time into the U.S. market who may have struggled to get tax equity. Now, all of those parties are able to access the transfer market. The other piece that's been helpful, particularly for small developers, and when you enter into a tax credit transfer agreement, the seller has to make a number of representations, right, with respect to the qualification of the tax credit, the level of the tax credit, and you have to back that with an indemnity. Now, a lot of these smaller developers don't necessarily have the credit to get buyers comfortable, but the insurance market, the tax credit insurance market has really stepped into that void, and we're starting to see a lot of insurance products out there. You know, so for the smaller developer, then pay the insurance premium, sell the tax credit, you know, get the capital and build out their projects.
And speaking of all these changes to the investment environment of renewable energy, we can't ignore the fact that we are in an election year in the United States, where the policies and rhetoric of the two parties around fossil and renewable energy diverge pretty starkly. How are investors in the renewable energy sector reacting to uncertainty over which party will be in power come January?
Yeah, I think for the most part, it's still full speed ahead, but watching, you know, the elections fairly carefully. I mean, our analysis is that, first of all, the big change comes with a clean sweep, right? If you have a Republican House, Senate, and White House, then you have potential for change. The biggest issue out there, we believe, is, you know, what happens to the 2017, you know, tax cuts that are due to expire. We believe, and it's been pretty public, that's going to be a priority of a Trump administration, is to extend those credits. That costs money, a lot of money. And so the question is, where do you look for money to plug the holes if you do? And I think that one of the things that we would be concerned about is the what's called the tech neutral ITC and PTC tax credits that kick in, I think, next year and continue to 2032, probably could be at risk. We think the 45Q carbon capture has fairly broad bipartisan support, so probably not at risk. And one of the things we've been encouraging our clients to think about is going back and what's called grandfathering, you know, projects so that they qualify for the current ITC and PTC so that no matter what happens, you know, through the next 4 years, you know, you get your tax credits for at least for the ITC and the PTC. But as you point out, it's a very much different outcome depending on exactly how that election goes. So we're not seeing a slowdown in development, but people watching it very, very carefully.
Well, I'm sure until November, we will all be on the edge of our seats. Matt, thanks so much for joining us today, and I hope you find the time to stop by the podcast again really soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's all for this week's edition of Crossroads, the Infrastructure Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Please remember to follow us, like us, rate and review us on the Android or iPhone application of your choice, or go to infralogic.com to order all of our podcast episodes on audio cassette. I'm Chuck Stanley. Until next time.